This episode of New Old Friends is brought to you by Mission Bar.
Mission Bar, located at 302 North Main Street in beautiful Santa Ana, Califas.
Mission Bar, the official sponsor of the New Old Friends
podcast. Also, for a great Santa Ana authentic taco, check out our latest sponsor, Tacos El Grinder. Just kidding, Tacos El Gringo, baby.
I like Grinder better. And for daily specials and locations, make sure to check them out on Instagram for all that info at tacos_EL_grinder.
Also, be sure to check out their keto taco, my personal favorite. Hell yeah.
Welcome back. My name is Joseph. You can check me out on Instagram/Grindr because Instagram is going to buy Grindr. Joseph Padillo Official.
Yo, what's up, everyone? Welcome back. This is Mike. You can find me on OnlyFans at Mike_IZL. You can find me on Tinder and Grindr at Mike_IZL. Welcome back.
You're on both of them.
I'm on both of them.
I like it. You're playing, you know, you're playing the odds.
I am, dude.
That's smart, dude. Fucking smart. I wish I would have done that.
So what did you think about Jerry, man?
Total badass, dude.
Hell yeah.
Total badass.
So today, guys, we had our friend Jerry Zayden from Camberg come through. And, you know, we pick out his brain for a little bit. We get a little bit of history on Camberg. Mm-hmm. And we get to know Jerry a little bit better, huh, Joe?
Yeah, man. It was cool because obviously you have like a history with him and stuff, and you've been around him a lot, spent a lot of time with him. And I pretty much just know what I see on like social media. So mm-hmm. It was cool that you like sit here and have a little conversation with him and see how, you know, the business got started. And, you know, he basically just found a need and something that was missing in the industry and just made it come true. And look at them now.
Yeah, I think Jerry made some really good pointers on this episode as far as, you know, when they're hiring someone, what they look for. Mm-hmm. And also from a, you know, business perspective, you know, I'm somewhat like an entrepreneur trying to start something up, kind of what to do, right? I think.
Yeah, exactly. He gives a lot of good pointers on what to do if you're hesitant on starting a business and how to kind of stay true to yourself and what it takes in his eyes to make something successful.
Yeah. So if you guys want to check out Jerry's company, Camberg, it's camberg.com. If you have a Tacoma, Toyota, you want a lift kit or long travel kit, go check them out. Mm-hmm. But Joe, what did you think of Jerry's Jeep, though? So dreamy, huh?
Dude, that thing was so nice. Just seeing him like pull up in it, I was like, oh man, my truck's a piece of shit. And then like actually sitting inside of it, I was like, now I know it's a piece of shit.
I was going to ask Jerry to park on top of your truck. I know, dude.
It would have taken him no effort.
Right? Four low, let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we ended up going for some food after this episode. Mm-hmm. We got a chance to ride in that badass little Jeep.
Yeah, man. I think it's so cool. And like sitting in the passenger seat, I was looking at people driving past us or us passing them or people on the sidewalk, and everybody was like, what the hell is that thing?
Jerry's over here snapping necks.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's cool.
Yeah. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed having Jerry here. Mm-hmm. Jerry, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, big thank you for
being
out,
a guest. Yeah. Yeah. Did you see all the calls that he was like getting?
Yeah, he's a busy man, dude. So it just, you know, further proves, you know, how good of a guy he is and how cool he is to kind of just come over here and talk to us, really, you know, because, yeah, I mean, his time is super valuable. So,
of course.
Yeah, super appreciate that and definitely won't forget that.
Yeah, so guys, check out this episode. I hope you guys like it. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week.
Mm-hmm.
And please like, share, repost to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Tell all your friends. Tell everybody. And yeah, we'll catch you guys on the next one.
Peace. Yo, what is up, everyone? Welcome back to New Old Friends Podcast. My name is Mike.
And my name is Joseph.
And we are here with...
Jerry Zaden.
Yo, what's up, Jerry? Welcome, man.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, man, it's been a while. I feel like we tried to make this happen a while ago, and then COVID happened, and, you know, shit got crazy.
Weird times. That's all I'm going to say is weird times.
Yeah, it's very odd.
Yeah. Well, I'm so stoked that you're finally here. How, you know, speaking of COVID, how has that affected your business at all?
Yeah, it really has. You know, it's just these weird times, and it's affected us in a really good way.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad because I have friends that have opened up like workout studios or restaurants or whatever, and it's affected them in a negative way. So yeah. I don't want to like be too boastful over the good business we've had. But yeah, it's been really terrific. A lot of people I feel are just enjoying outdoors, and, you know, the people not locking themselves in their homes, I feel, you know, they're just like, hey, I got the time off with the family. Let's just get out and live life. And yeah. They're camping and exploring and fishing and doing all kinds of stuff. So
yeah that's true. Yeah, that's what I was telling Mike when, like, because I was doing the same thing. I went up to like Portland. I went up north, Central Valley, to visit my family. And that was the one takeaway. I was like, I would never have this much time off to visit family or to like hang out with them. Like the last time I had this much time off was in between like high school and like college, which is like a month or two. So it's just like, it's like a weird blessing in disguise. Yeah. You know?
So Jerry, you mentioned camping and overlanding. What did you roll up in? You have a pretty sweet ride that you pulled up in.
Yeah, I took the 6-hour Jeep Gladiator up here. It's a little collab we did with SIG, the gun company. That's what you know them as. They're really good in the outdoor hunting space. Obviously, they do military, police, all that stuff. But the big thing they're going after, you know, is kind of getting that kind of enthusiast market. You know, guns aren't all about like shooting things that are living. You know, you can shoot targets and have fun with them, just the sport of it. And so we collabed with them with the new Jeep Gladiator. So we built this thing out. I mean, it's just built to the hilt for overlanding, you know. So suspension, Dynatrac axles that are 8-lug. I mean, this is the stuff you find on the King of the Hammers race vehicles on this Gladiator. Fox top-of-the-line shocks, 37-inch General X3 muds on Method beadlock wheels, and I mean, the thing's just badass. And
it's bulletproof.
Yeah, and it's got that big go-fast camper on the back of it and the Warren winch and the Genrite bumpers and fenders. And so a lot of people don't know, but I own an Instagram page called Jeeps Only. It's one of the largest Jeep enthusiast social media pages. And, you know, I've never really monetized the page or anything, so it's kind of, it stays authentic. I just repost a lot of people's good videos and pictures of their awesome builds.
Yeah.
And now we have our own build. And yeah, I mean, that thing's, you can go anywhere with it. It's 4-wheel drive. It's got good power, good wheelbase, rides great. And, you could live out of it, you know? So it's got an awning off the side. It's got lights and the camper. It's really cool.
Yeah. That thing looks like a monster, man.
Yeah.
And I was like pulling out, like, cause, we switched spots. I was pulling out. I was like, now my truck looks like shit.
So on that Jeep, Gladiator, it's running, what Camberg parts is it running?
So Camberg wise on it, we built the lower suspension control arms on it, and we're testing out a uniball and a heim joint, because a lot of people in the Jeep market, they're, hey, that stuff makes a lot of noise, it clunks, it squeaks, whatever. The problem is in the aftermarket world, heim joints and uniballs aren't just all heim joints and uniballs. Yeah. So there's stuff made in China, stuff made in Taiwan, stuff made in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously, you know, over in the Asian communities, there's lower quality and higher quality, just like there is here in the States.
Yeah.
So we use all FK made in the United States, uniballs, rod ends. Well, I can tell you that all the upper arms and a lot of the other parts are from other Jeep companies we're testing out product. And that's the stuff squeaking, clunking, and rattling. But these FK uniballs and heims are still super tight, no noise, no clunk, way more solid.
Yeah.
So it's, for us, it's more of a test bed, you know, of like kind of development before we jump into Jeep, you know, full speed. We want to immerse ourselves in the Jeep, learn the Jeep, live the Jeep.
Yep.
And then, okay, this is what we're going to do, because there's definitely room for a lot of improvement.
Yeah, I think that's great. Everything you just mentioned is just like, you guys are about it. You're not just, hey, like, I'm throwing this in the market. But no, like, you guys are using it, testing it, and doing your research and doing your homework, which is pretty epic.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So as of right now, Camberg makes parts for what make and models right now?
I mean, pretty much we started Camberg. Jason and I, his first vehicle? Well, we both started Camberg with Toyota trucks. So he had a 1984 or 5 Toyota truck. I had a 1990 Toyota truck, and, you know, we developed parts for the Toyotas, but that whole Ford Ranger crowd was knocking on our door hard.
Yeah, I-beams.
All about the I-beams, right? So back in the day, there was a company called Autofab down in San Diego, and they bent the I-beams. But they made bushing radius arms and triple or quadruple shocks, and they weren't really paying attention to the new technology that was out there, which would be 2.5-inch diameter shocks that were on the trophy trucks at the time. You know, 2.5-inch, you had Bilstein. Fox wasn't even making 2.5-inch coilovers yet. And then another shock brand out there was called Custer, and Custer was making 2-inch and 3-inch shock absorbers. Well, this was 1997, we started Camberg, and so we didn't really have a lot of choices, but we were doing a lot of Bilstein. So we brought the Bilstein 2.0 as like a dual shock thing. We then did the heim joint radius arms, where the only place you ever see a heim joint was on a trophy truck or a Class 8 race truck or something. So we brought that to kit form. We were mounting, Bilstein, what they call 60 millimeter coilovers, which was a 2.5-inch coilover, on the front of these Ford Rangers. So now you had wider I-beams, longer radius arms. And then, you know, Fox got in the game of the shocks. And so now you start seeing the technology coming. So, you know, we're still having Autofab bend the beams from us. We're to install those more kind of basic stuff. And then we had the high end. Then Toyota and Ford, really just the Tacoma, you know, came out in 95.
Yeah.
It was so new. And then the A-arm Ranger started coming out, because 97 was the last year of Ford Ranger with I-beams, and then 98 came the A-arm trucks. So we developed in the early 2000s. First, we raced an I-beam truck. Then we did the Ford Ranger Edge, which was a two-wheel drive Ford Ranger built on the four-wheel drive chassis, similar to the Toyota Tacoma pre-runner. So we had long travel for Toyota. We developed long travel for the Ford Ranger. We then raced the Ford Ranger on our suspension kit and then morphed it into long travel. Then set goals like, hey, you know, we need to get into the trophy truck, right? Yeah. So suspension-wise for Camberg is, you know, Tacoma, Ranger. Ranger's kind of going away. They, you know, now it's the new Ranger. It's going to take a few more years for it to catch on. But a lot of Chevy Silverado, Chevy HD, Ford F-150, Tundra, Tacoma, FJ, 4Runner. Those are the basics, because I feel like they lend well to off-road, and they also lend well to aftermarket parts. They're both very high quality vehicles, and we're able to make parts to get people out to and enjoy outdoors.
Yeah, that's so rad. So let's take it back a bit. You're born and raised in HB, is that right?
I was actually born in Arizona. My parents moved to Huntington Beach when I was 3. So I would say, yeah, raised Huntington Beach for sure.
Nice. What high school did you go to?
I went to Huntington Beach High School.
Awesome. Is that where you met Jason?
Yeah, we actually went to junior high school together. Wow. knew each other then, but then I think it was like when we had cars in the parking lot, that's when you start seeing people sharing your interests, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, they got off-road trucks and they fix their trucks up. I do mine. And I was good friends with his next door neighbor, Justin. And so all of us would go to the desert races, and way back in the day, it was called the Fireworks 250 score race. And, we would go to those races and just watch them in awe of these trophy trucks going by. And then, back to it, and slowly, you know, in the beginning of our company, we would go to these races, you know, as a small little, you know, what were we, 1480 square feet as our first little building. Yeah. And we would bring parts, set them on a table, hear all the criticism from all the people that knew better than us, and, you know, take it back to the shop and, okay, well, we know what we're doing is good and we're just going to keep doing that. But okay, that was good criticism. Let's take that and move forward.
Yeah. So even before that, how did you and Jason decide, hey, dude, like, let's team up and let's start this company. How did that talk come about?
He was working in a place in Costa Mesa called BMP Fabrication, or Bob Miller Performance. Jason worked there when we were in high school. And I just remember, like, I'd go there, like, our nickname was Hot Rods to Curtain Rods, because the guy would do anything for a buck. And there was zero focus. And, you know, I remember talking to Bob going, hey, why don't we like make some products and grow this into something good?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just young and ambitious. And he's like, oh, there's no money in off-road, whatever. But, you know, he would do hot rods, like Mike Ness from Social Distortion. I had a Pontiac back then. Jason did a lot of that work.
Nice.
And this other guy named Eric that was there had some like beautiful Buick. Like, I don't know what year it was, but like 50s Buick. And then tubbed it and big block it, like all the stuff, wound up taking all the parts, throwing the Buick away. And I'm talking like this would be a $50,000 car today because it was beautiful. And then put them in some truck and then made that kind of his hot rod, you know, just all that kind of stuff. And one day I went by there and Jason's underneath like an old dually with like tranny fluid dripping from his hair. You know, that's probably why Jason's bald. Tranny fluid just wiped everything out.
That's what happened.
Yeah, that's for sure what it was. But yeah, he built parts in his garage. I started welding because I was into surfing and making surfboards, and I had to make the metal racks to shape the boards on. And I got known for making the metal shaping racks and went to Orange Coast College, learned some welding, and you know, obviously I knew everything because I was young and that's what young people do. But I was doing it.
Yeah,
you know? And the then, matters. You know, we started making some parts in my parents' garage, and then that led into, you know, the city knocking on the door going, hey, you know, what are you doing here? You can't like have trucks showing up to your house and work on them. It's like, you can't do a business like that.
Yeah.
So then we signed a 6-month lease on a building in Huntington Beach, and then the rest is history from there.
That's insane, dude. So how long were you working out of the garage?
I mean, I always had, my parents had a 3-car garage. So they're like, you get that one side, you know, just don't let it cross over into our side. And,
yeah.
You know, I had a tube bender and a Burr King, and I sub-paneled out the garage to add more 220 power. Mm. And the Miller stick welder in the beginning. And then I remember getting my first Miller MIG welder, and that was like it. And it's so much better. Probably, you know, on my own for a few years doing, I did really high end car audio back in the day. And I always tease, I'm like, man, if we had cell phones, the people I did stereos for, right? Like Kid Frost, Dr. Dre, all these guys.
Way.
So there's a place called Concepts up past Knott's Berry Farm. I think it's where like the, what's that big car dealership? You know, they kind of sell everything. CarMax.
Okay.
I think there's a CarMax up there. And that used to be kind of like this building we're in, but it was like a building. And then in the back of the building, it was kind of like covering. So it didn't have walls, but you were covered. If it was raining out, you could work under it, right? And the guy there, he was from LA, but he would do all the hydraulics and all these cars back then. We would do the stereos. And so I worked at a place in Sunset Beach. That's right. You know, learned a lot from a guy named Mario up there. Mario's from Compton, and he was the install guy. And so we were the guys going into Compton, like all the lowrider shows, but we had Toyotas and whatever with stereos in them. It was cool, you know, and they loved us. Like, you know, they're like, you know, who are these white dudes coming into Compton? And this is in like 1988, 89. And I mean, the different gang dudes. Yeah,
it was rough.
It was rough, yeah, but man. They all got along because it's like they're on common ground with the cars, right?
Yeah.
Mm,
yeah.
And it was stereos, beds of mini trucks that would spin and lift up and, you know, the Daytons on all kinds of different things.
On everything.
Yeah. And we were very intimidated coming in there. Like, are you sure we can go
there? Are we cool?
But they loved it, you know? Yeah. And so then, you know, I got to do some amazing stuff, working some amazing vehicles, seeing these vehicles in the music videos. It was really cool. But there's like no pictures.
Yeah.
Like we didn't have cameras and we never took the pictures. Like today it's like you'd have video of everything. Mm, you know, be all over the world would see it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back then we got nothing.
Yeah, everyone had the phone.
Man. Yeah. Fun stuff. So a lot of different things in the automotive world, you know, so just live in the passion. That's just anyone asks like, so what should I do? How should I start? Well, you already started because you're into it. Now go do it.
Yeah.
That's it. Just go try it. You know, it's that simple.
Yeah. I think that's what it comes down to with everything. It's just doing it. I know it sounds cliche or just do it, but honestly, just freaking go out there and do it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you got to expose yourself to different situations or circumstances, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we're on a podcast, right? And who taught you how to hook up all this stuff and computers and you just did it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
You figured it out. You probably had, like, go think back that first computer you had and the first little anything you had, you know, you build it. You got to work hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Curiosity is a big factor in that too, you know?
Yeah. So Jerry, you said you were rocking a Toyota back in the day.
Yeah.
What was your setup like? Like what was your setup like and what kind of work did you do to it?
From the off-road standpoint?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had a few different Toyotas. So my first was a 1989 and that, you know, started. So back to the stereo thing, I had the choice of a tape deck and Pioneer speakers that the stereo shop would install, but I wanted a CD player and it was probably around 1989. No, it was 1989 because it was a 1989 pickup, but I did get it before. So anyways, 1989 pickup. Let's go back to there. And then I wanted a CD player, but CD players were crazy expensive back then. It's like they're just coming out. Yeah. And it's like, I can get a CD player, but I got to put it in myself. So the guy at the shop was cool and he goes, yeah, you'll figure it out. Let me just draw what each wire color is and then you could figure it out from there. And my dad was in the business of like electronics. So he was always a salesman. So it was like tools and electronics, all these different things. So he knew about cutting wire and crimping, but nothing else. Like he was just a sales guy. So I just figured it out. I'm like, okay, there's a plug. These are the wires. And a couple of wires got kind of mixed up and, you know, figured it out the hard way. The install was not very clean, but it was in there and it worked. So that showed me, hey, if I could put a CD player in here and cut holes with a steak knife in my cardboard Toyota door panels, right? Yeah. I can do this. So I just quickly figured it out from there. You know, mini trucks are a big thing. I wanted my truck kind of lifted. And one of my buddies, Greg, we're in our science class and he had a Downey off-road catalog. And he's like, check this out. And I had like the little Toyotas in there. I'm like, okay, bought some parts, you know, put the money into the truck and installed some stuff myself and had shops install my stuff. But it seemed like the shops did a worse job than I did because they just didn't care.
Yeah.
And then I got a 1990 pickup truck, which is an extra cab instead of the standard cab. And then it had fuel injection instead of a carburetor. And that got more pre-runnered out. I had fenders and 33-inch tires. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Had some Fabtech parts on it. And that's just what created the curiosity. I want more than that. And that's where Jason and myself were like, we need to go wider suspension, like long travel. And so Jason was making some, you know, copying the stock geometry, but making it 3 inches wider. Then we'd get it on there and learn about the ball joint angles. Okay, this worked better and just kind of grew it from there.
Yeah.
I made a few parts, sold them to friends, sold upper A-arms to Duffco, which was a Toyota guy. And, you know, he had a little square ad in Azusa, California. So Paul Duffy was related to Patricia, who owned MDR, and then that got us into racing. So it's just this slow, like someone knows someone.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they're in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I just grew it from there.
Awesome. So how often would you and Jason go out to like Barstow, or where would you take your trucks out to go mob it?
Well, back then, Huntington Beach was a lot of fields.
Oh,
so it was like, you know, what's known as the top of Edwards Hill is all big multi-million dollar homes. That was just open field. So I'd off-road on the way to school in the morning.
Oh, that's tight.
Yeah. Pretty badass.
And then when school would get out and it was raining, then we'd be off-roading at lunchtime, you know. It was, okay, it's muddy fields. Let's go do this, you know. And friends have rolled trucks out there. They've seen kids, like, get their dad beat down because they screwed the truck up. It was great. But yeah, I was always pretty responsible, and we liked to go fast. So we had good suspension, and yeah, like there was Smoky Stables, we called it. So it was like Warner and Bolsa Chica. Like there used to be a bunch of power line poles that they stored out there. We'd go off-roading around there, all on top Edwards Hill. And then on Sundays, there was no security in the in the oil fields because they were all at home.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we knew how to get into the gate. And so we'd off-road all through the oil fields, ride motorcycles, shoot guns, the whole thing. It was fun.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Sounds like the good old days.
Yeah. There's nothing like that anymore. No, everything's so populated.
Everything is. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then you get in trouble anywhere you go. Like, you can't off-road anywhere. You have to go really far nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got to go far. You know, you go up to Big Bear, and there's like a million people up there. Yeah. It kind of takes the fun away from it.
Yeah, it sure does. So you guys, so you and Jason got the shop, started making parts, and at this point, are you guys like mass producing parts or making parts for like a couple of friends, or how are you guys making money at this point?
Yeah, I mean, our whole philosophy has just been like, just take what you need. Yeah. Right. Like, it's easy to just look at that bank account and just grab all the money out of it and go buy a bunch of dumb stuff. But we always just bought equipment. Right. Like, let's get better tools, better equipment. We've never really mass produced anything. Like, we're producing things. Right. Yeah. But we're still handmade in Huntington Beach. Try to use as much domestic material as possible. We really want to buy material from the United States and support our country. Just, you know, it's just the way we are about it. Right. And yeah, so just always growing, always coming out with something new, but not being irresponsible. And like, there's that the funny term in business, like the first one to lie succeeds. It's very easy to go, oh, we have this new kit and it gives 30 inches of wheel travel and it's the best thing ever. And then people buy it and they're like, oh, well, that didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're very conservative with how we put product out in the marketplace because we don't want it coming back. We don't want to sell something to someone because they had to work hard for that money. We want to give them quality. Mm-hmm. We want to give them what's not going to totally ruin their vehicle, because you could overdo your vehicle and make it too much, you know. And if it gets too far out of hand, then you're just not comfortable driving it every day.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah. That's cool, man. It's like you said, you can easily just mass produce and have a factory make all your parts and just put your name on it and just pretty much like sell out and like just collect checks.
Yeah.
But it's cool that you guys have like integrity and like pride in what you do. You know, I feel like that's coming back a little bit for sure.
I think it is.
Yeah. I think what's super cool about you guys is, you know, even like your earlier Ford Rangers is like you guys would race a certain part and then sell it. So you're buying a race proven part, you know?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we still even do that. You know, we did the Mint 400. Jay Leno and I raced the Mint 400 and we did our billet upper control arms and they were race tested and race winning now because they survive. For us, it just survived the Mint 400.
Yeah.
Right. And we actually, that truck finished the race pretty quickly. You know, Jay was pretty slow in the truck. He's like trying to look over the steering wheel, but he was just, you know, in Jay's world doing it, having fun. And, you know, he got to experience that Mint 400 and it's brutal. I mean, I forget, you know, you take a stock Tacoma, which stock with Fox coilovers, Fox bypass shocks, Camberg upper arms, still very modified suspension, but you get it on that race course where trophy trucks have been tearing it up and you're like, oh, why couldn't I just be in that trophy truck?
Yeah.
It's such a difference. I mean, you're not even driving in the middle of the course. You're kind of hugging the center and hugging the berm because it's smoother.
Yeah.
So you're kind of driving on the rails of kind of out of the bumps, you know, like kind of like a class 11 bug would. And, but yeah, it's just, it's fun. It's good times.
Nice. How did you and like Jay Leno like connect?
Through Toyota. Yeah. So Toyota had the new TRD Tacoma Pro line of the Tacoma, the 4Runner and the Tundra. And so we did the Tacoma and, yeah. So Toyota put together this cool program and yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was cool.
Sounds awesome.
Jerry, at what was your first race and what truck did you race?
Jason and I, we had our first Ford Ranger truck, which was an I-beam, like a, I think it was a 1994, if I remember correctly, but it was the white truck. There's a good video of me crashing it on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I have it on my phone.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, more about that video, because I know it, like you used to watch like crazy videos on regular TV, and I saw that video there. Like it was just, it's all over, you know? What happened?
Well, so yeah, that was, I think, our, third race in that truck. You know, we always got on the podium. I was actually a half an hour in the lead. Wow. And I'm on my second lap, and I'm about to hand the truck to Jason, and I'm in the main pit at Barstow Main where everyone tests. Honestly, it was just really bad shock setup, you know? Mm. So the back end just took it, and it just sprung out and bucked me up over to the right and up, and that was the end of it. No way to control it. And,
shit.
You know, it was like, wow, did I really just do that?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're in the lead, especially, it'd be one thing if I was in fifth place trying to catch back up. But when you're in the lead and I'm like, I could just be taking it easy, hand it to Jason, let him go.
Yeah.
And it just happened, you know.
What was going through your mind as you just started bucking and flipping?
Honestly, it just kind of came up and to the right. And if you watch the video, you'll see the tires turning to the right, trying to save it.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it landed, it just caught the right A-pillar on the passenger side. The hit was so hard that it was like, boom. And it was spinning the truck and everything got kind of weightless. Like, and I went, oh, that wasn't so bad. And then boom, 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 boom. And just keeps going. And so I'm talking to my co-driver as we're rolling. It wasn't that bad inside.
Yeah.
And then right when it stopped, I'm like, you okay? He goes, yeah, I'm good. You? And I'm like, good. Okay. Turned off the battery switch. Now we can't talk to each other because our helmets are on.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are running up to the truck and pulling the windshield off of it and getting us out of it. And it just is what it is. And, you know, looked at it and was like, oh, that sucks. And then the very next race after we fixed the truck, Jason did it. It just wasn't on video, so that was okay.
Yeah, what happened to Jason, do you know?
We actually were dumb enough to put a V8 engine in the truck for the next race.
Nice.
Got the truck working a lot better. He just bucked up in the rear and landed on the front bumper, landed straight on the roof. So his crash was probably, in reality, more violent, you know, because it just went from like fast to stop.
Oh,
more than likely, because it just landed on the roof. And then, yeah, he was bummed because, you know, he does a lot of the hands-on work. You know, I'm more like through the shop order at that time, ordering parts, making things happen. That was it. Then we started putting that back together. Someone bought that truck off of us and we moved on to the Ranger Edge. And that was really successful. I had a lot of fun with that one.
And the Ranger Edge is the black one, yeah?
The black one, yeah.
Nice. You guys have a pretty epic poster of it. I think I have it somewhere in the house.
Nice. Yeah, that was a really cool truck.
Yeah. So from the White Ranger to the Ranger Edge, at what point did you guys decide to roll out with like a 6100 truck?
I would say when the Edge morphed in 2007 to the 7200 class, which was really the rules in 07 were full tube chassis, anything goes V6. And you had to be 85 inches wide. At that time, I was already talking to Casey at Best in the Desert, asking him, like, why can't we have a spec V8? Because that's like $5,000 compared to a V6 could be like $60,000, right? He just was like, well, because I have Trick Truck, which is their trophy truck class, which would be the V8. And I'm like, I know, but we're Americans and we like V8 power. It's just what we do, right? So 07, we did the 61 or the 7200 class V6 that never opened up to different engines. Then we went to a Toyota stock full that's, you know, working with Toyota on the new Tundra. So we did the 07 Baja 1000. Then in 08, we started racing that. And then we started designing our trophy truck. So the trophy truck we started building, which is the first kinetic truck. And that truck we built and raced in the 2009 Baja 1000. And our only goal was like, hey, let's just go have fun and let's finish.
Yeah.
Like we know we're not going to win, but let's finish. You know, this was our goal. We've made it. Let's just make it happen. And we finished. It was great. We had another guy drive the middle section of the race. So Jason was doing the start. This guy was doing the middle and I was doing the finish. And he wound up having, you know, got stuck a couple times, got into bottlenecks, and, you know, he caused a lot of downtime with that. And it's not necessarily his fault. It's just the way Baja plays out. And it was a blessing in disguise because either way, we weren't going to win, right? So Jason starts. He gets to basically Ojos, and he's got motion sickness. So he gets motion sickness.
The big rollers?
Yeah, just whatever it is, the dust, the rollers. And so he gets to the first time you get on the pavement, like mile 50. He had already gotten out of the truck with motion sickness and got back in the truck and got out of the truck and back in the truck. Now he hands it to – I can't go. So now I'm like, all right, cool. I'll get my helmet on now. I take off from like mile 50 to mile 200. I did 150 miles. Up and over the summit, through the forest, that whole thing. And then, you know, got down to Borrego and handed it to Steve Myers, was the guy doing the middle leg. Yeah. He was going to do the San Felipe loop. He just got off of a class 10 championship. So he was the perfect guy. He goes, yeah, because we weren't pre-running and he knows that area. So he's like, I'll do San Felipe. Loved it. And then got in one bottleneck in the wash somewhere by San Felipe. Yeah. Because it gets real rocky, and if someone gets stuck, it just blows it for everybody. And then he gets through that and then gets up by like Mike Sky Ranch area. So I'm going to jump in it. My thing was to get in at Valley T and go a few hundred miles to the finish. Yeah. Well, he had all that trouble through the night. Well, I'm getting waken up at like 6 a.m. It was freezing outside. Like I'm talking 28 degrees. Oh, like it was a cold year. Yeah. And, the blessing in disguise was either way, we weren't winning the race. So I got to get in the truck around 6, 7 a.m.
Oh, shit.
And have no one on the race course to the finish line. Yeah. As the sun's coming up behind me. It was beautiful. Yeah. Had a helicopter following me. I have tons of video footage of it. It was really cool. And what's funny is like, we didn't really have any test time with the truck. We took it to Lucerne and just made sure nothing's leaking and is shifting and everything's good. Then brought it back to the shop. This is like the Monday or the Friday or weekend, whatever, before the Baja 1000.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we didn't really push it too hard. Shocks were pretty soft, whatever. We're just getting it there.
Yeah.
And when the race is done, you know, you get to the finish line. I tried doing a burnout, like out of excitement, and wouldn't do a burnout. I'm like, that sucks. You know, I'm power braking. It's got a big V8. I know what's wrong.
Yeah.
Well, one of the exhaust header tubes was brand new. All the other ones were burned in, meaning we were only running on 7 cylinders that whole race.
Oh, shit.
So, I mean, it was still fast. I mean, I hit 120 miles an hour at one point, right? Like 116 or something.
Yeah.
So it still goes because we had this big stroked LSX engine. It was like a 470 cubic inch tall deck engine. It was like some gnarly power, but neither of us have experienced it. And I told Jason, I go, you know, it's funny as I remember being in the sand wash, catching the Lucky Sperm race team, Cam Theron in his one car. And, you know, I got to nerf a one car and I was like, okay, that was cool. You know, I'm in a trophy truck now. I could do this. Anyways, I remember being in the bumps, feeling like the power coming on, like, oh, that was weird. You feel that? Like, it felt like it got way more power.
A little boost. Mm.
Yeah. So it was the spark plug wire was loose, like the like it wasn't pushed all, like someone either reached under there and pulled one off. Who knows?
Yeah.
And so I think it started like working and then not working and then, you know, so kind of one of those things. But that header tube was literally like
brand new.
Brand new. Like you can see the heat in all the header tubes except that one. It was like brand new stainless steel almost, you know. And like, okay. So then after that we did what was it? We did Parker, then we did the Mint 400, did that whole year. I had a lot of fun in the truck. And then the next year, Jerry Welchel came on board and his first race was the second Mint 400 in that truck. And he actually was running strong. Like him and Roger Norman were battling it out. I think Roger got second or third. I think on time we were in second place. And then right at the very last pit, we pulled in with a broken diff. So, and that was, you know, really our fault because, you know, we're like, oh, it has the Parker diff in it. We didn't prep the diff. If we'd have prepped the diff, we would have, you know, been second or third for sure. And that would have been really cool. But the reality is we're running there all day. Welch will put on a show.
Yeah.
And then he drove the truck for a while. And then we just kept like having one race on the podium, one race, something blew up in the engine. Went to another engine builder, broke the timing chain twice in a row with him, got frustrated. Called Casey at Best in the Desert and said, hey, we really need to do a spec V8. Like, this is just dumb. And so that's when 6100 was born to the masses because Jim Riley had the first truck with the Trophy Light R8. which was its own class called 6100, because 6000 is the trophy, like the little four cylinder. Yeah. 6100 was the V8 class. Well, no one was buying those trucks. He had one. So all the rules had to go around what he already had.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
So that's why we had the 430 horsepower LS3. We should have just started off that class with, we're all stock LS7s, because that would have been giving trophy trucks a run for their money, right? Yeah. And so that's how 6100 came to the masses, is me bugging Casey from 07 to, you know, what year was it? I think 2012 was probably that first 6100 to the everyone year. And it was a Vegas Torino, they opened it up. So, and then we wound up winning Vegas Torino that year by a lot. Like, yeah. Not so much in the class, but we beat all the 10 cars, all the 7200s, 10th overall, the trophy trucks, and we started behind everybody. So we had a lot of dust to deal with. So it was really cool. And since then, you know, we've had, you know, different drivers. Like Jason and I have been on the podium. We've had Welchel drive. We've had Alex Figge driving with us. Then we had Kyle Jurgensen. And last year's Vegas Torino, I mean, the dude qualified like near the top six out of all the trophy trucks and everything with 37-inch tires and 430 horsepower.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And then out of the whole race, I think he was like fourth or fifth truck overall, which is, it hasn't been done. We beat second place by half an hour, you know, in our class, but we're beating up on the trophy trucks with small tires and, you know, that just shows you the strength of the 37.
Yeah.
It was cool.
That's crazy how, it went from 35s. We're like, everybody wanted 35s, 37s, 39s. What, some people run, is it 40s or something?
40s are the biggest ones. Yeah. And it's like, you know, there's a point, I feel like the tires, for the top dollar teams, they could afford to run them. But you see all the problems people have with bigger tires. And it's really chewing up the whole race course now, too. Like, oh, if you're not on a 40, I mean, I got stuck at Vegas Torino in the trophy truck with the big Dugan engine and everything. Just the diff just high-centered. If I had a bigger tire, I wouldn't have gotten stuck. But that just – what happens to the guy with the 33s? You know, like a 10 car or a stock truck, like those guys start behind everybody. Like they're just dealing with a lot of torn up stuff, you know.
And hey, you think that's bad, the guys in class 11, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know how 11 car would make it through some
But you know what it is? They're so narrow that you're able to pick your own line, you know? Yeah. So yeah, everything's like, everything else around, like everything's wide. The class 11 is so narrow, you just find a way to do it.
You know? I think they kind of hug the hump, right? You go on the middle and the side and just.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was actually, I was at the 07 Baja 1000, and we were all the way down the peninsula, a town called Mulegé, pretty far south. And we're in the silt, and I'm in a four-wheel drive Tundra, tons of power. Our tire company at the time, they wanted us to run this new tire they had. You know, it had like this flame pattern on it, and they didn't have it in a 37 or a 35, so we're running like a 33.5, which we, you know, the Tundra is that really big diff, so it hangs down. So the bigger the tire, the more ground clearance. Yeah. Well, you have four-wheel drive, four low, tons of power, still got stuck because it's just the diff high centers.
Yeah.
And you can't really hug the terrain, right? And then a class 11 car just right by, just like, dude, we just got passed by a 1965 bug. Like, really?
Looking at each other? Shit.
Yeah. But that's just how it happens.
That's funny. What are some of your favorite experiences down in Baja?
There's really so many. I mean, that place is, we've had a lot of fun times. You know, going down there with the FMF crew on dirt bikes has been fun. Racing, obviously, like the Tundra. Even our first races when we did the Ranger down there. And, like, it's just, you know, I'm going, and when I'm going, it's like, you don't even know where you are. Yeah. You're like, I'm a dot on my GPS screen, but I haven't pre-run this. I never spent time. I don't know, guys, the filter's clogged and something's going on with the engine. I'm here. Well, where's here?
Yeah.
I have no idea where I am. Now, when I go back there and go that one time, all they had to do is come south from Borrego on the highway. South is, you know, heading north from San Felipe and cut across 3 miles down a flat, dry lake bed. And there I was.
Yeah.
Like it was, now I can say, hey, do this and you'd be there. At the time I was on Mars or the moon. Like, I don't know. I'm here.
Yeah.
Well, where's here? I don't know. Cause if you ever look at a GPS, there's no data. It's a line going through yellow. Like it's like, I'm just in this spot somewhere between mile 140 and 150. I don't know. And yeah, so those are good times. And then, you know, the tacos, the fireworks. If you've ever been downtown Ensenada, you got papas and beer and the food. It's just an amazing place.
Yeah, I think it's so epic because for like the Baja One, or for any Baja race, but especially the Baja 1000, the whole town's like a race town. Like kids don't go to school, people don't go to work, and everyone's at tech. You know, it's crazy, and you hear it all the time. People go crazy for stickers, and you're like, yeah, whatever. But it's till you see it, people do go crazy for stickers, dude.
Yeah, stickers are worth more than money. I'm not joking. Like, if you need tacos, I got stickers. Like, that's why they say it, right? Yeah. So we played on that game hard back. I have some 2005 Camberg race truck graphic on it. Stickers, yeah. And people love them, you know, and stickers or hats, t-shirts, yeah. You know. And I mean, in Mexico, you have people who have money, and there's a lot of people that don't have much at all. Yeah. And so we would bring, like, you know, hey, guys, whatever old clothing you have that's in good shape, just put it together in a plastic bag and we could just drop it off at an orphanage or whatever. Yeah. These people will wear it. They'll love it. And I mean, I remember doing that and then seeing people wearing that stuff, like old team shirts, you know, because we print team shirts, we wear it 4 or 5 times through the year. It's still a brand new t-shirt, but a sponsor changes and we have like a few hundred shirts, you know, yeah. So bring that stuff down there, or you just pass them out in the towns, like, you know, the guys that own the taco stands or you know, I don't want to call it a grocery store, but like a little convenience store, like a little market, yeah. Give them stuff and they're just stoked, you know? Yeah. And you'll see them wearing it like 8 years later, they're still got that t-shirt or the hat, you know, it's really
cool. Yeah, that's tight, man.
Yeah, it's pretty epic. It's a sight to see for sure.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then I remember one of the guys was driving the Tundra through tech and a lady, no joke, was like, sign my baby, like to give my baby an autograph, but like on the arm, and some dude's like, sign my forehead. He's got like signatures on his face.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, these are permanent markers. He's like, I don't care. Sign my forehead. Okay, cool. Be glad to do that.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. You know, it's a lot of fun out there. I remember when, you know, we chased with Alex for the Baja 1000, I think it was 2017. We got third place on your guys' truck.
Yeah.
That was super epic, man. It was
And you guys went all the way down to the Cabo, right?
Yeah. All the way to La Paz.
La Paz, yeah.
Yeah. So we were chasing nonstop, and yeah, we got third place, and I just, for us, dude, we just want to finish, you know?
Yeah.
And then towards the end, it's like, yo, dude, like we're like not too far from third place. Like, let's catch him. And yeah, Alex was pushing that thing, Alex and David. And sure enough, man, it was I don't know. I can't describe it. The feeling was it was a mix of emotions. It was so epic. It's like excitement. Like, I don't know. It's just crazy because you're tired too, you know?
Yeah. And you guys probably finished that in what, like 20 hours, 24 hours?
Yeah. Like either 23 or 24 hours.
So now take that Tundra we did, 54 hours.
Oh my God.
A whole nother day. And we started at like 3 in the afternoon because we're in the stock class, right? Yeah. Just like the class 11 cars are going to do that same thing. So I don't think people understand, like, the trophy truck guy, like the guy that gets all the recognition, or the top bike guys, like they're in and out of that race in like 20 hours, yeah. Right? You're talking an average of 50 miles an hour over 1,000 miles. So you just take that average, right? Well, but the Tacoma trucks and the Ford Rangers and the class 11 bugs and all that other stuff, I mean, it's averaging half the speed. Yeah. It takes twice as long. So 20 hours takes 40 hours. You know, it's crazy. The difference, and that, like, you're up and you're sleeping and you're back up, or where's the truck? All that goes through your mind. And when you just experience that 120, I mean, you were up for 24 hours.
We were.
And you're excited, even, you know, like, oh, I can sleep from 2 in the morning to whatever, but you're in the pit and you're just anxious because you're waiting. Like, oh, if I fall asleep, I don't want to miss them coming in the pit. Even, you know, you're going to be waking up, but you just can't sleep. You're on the adrenaline like the driver's on.
Exactly. And then you're bullshitting with the other chase trucks. Yo, what's up? Or like you're just talking smack, you know, the whole way, keeping each other awake, you know?
Totally. Yeah. It's just so much fun. And it's like, and even finishing, you can get 10th place and the whole team's popping champagne, right?
Because just because you finish, huh?
Yeah. But it's just, you put so much into it. It's honestly, I call it like running a marathon. It doesn't matter if you win, you completed it. Yeah. You know, it really means a lot.
Yeah, and these are memories that you take with you forever. You know, it's pretty epic. It's funny because when you're chasing trophy spec, you're literally chasing it. You're like, dude, we need to be at this checkpoint, like at this time. When you're chasing a class 11 bug, you're waiting.
You're like, hey, we're going to go over there to that taco stand, eat, yeah. Then we'll go back over. Yeah, you got time to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just crazy. And you know what, class 11, I give it up to those guys because they have the heart of a lion. They're just, you know, the engine broke. Cool, I know so-and-so in this town. Go get an engine. Go get a transmission. Oh, go get the tools. And it's just like a bucket with like screwdrivers and pliers, and they make shit happen. It's insane.
I was gonna say like I know, like some like NASCAR people, they lose like I don't know how much weight when they're racing. Like, how does that style of race like affect you physically?
I mean, it does. I mean, you don't think about it, but when you're sitting in the seats and you're in a race suit, you know, especially Baja, you can have freezing temperature to 80, 90 degree temperature. You're sitting in the truck, especially like the big trucks, right? Because you got radiators behind you and cooling lines going places. It gets warm in there. You got headers by the aluminum. So, I mean, your back, like I'll finish a race and my back's just wet, you know, like you're losing. So we have like, you know, a few gallons of water. We have a electric pump that, you know, you drink off of. I try to drink a lot, but you're drinking and sweating. You're not really peeing. You know, and sometimes people wear a catheter. I can't. And if I had to do a longer race, I'd have to figure that one out. But basically, it's like a condom with like a water weenie hanging off the end going down your pants. But try to pee. You know, like I could do it in a wetsuit surfing, but it's a lot different when you're sitting in a car. You're just like, and that's, you know, but some people have it down.
I have one of those in my car, my daily driver.
Yeah.
What's that leaking? Living down here, you need it. Stuck in traffic. Yeah, you definitely need one of those.
Going to LA.
Yeah, so it's just one of those things, you know. It's like you're definitely winded. I would have like a little door bag, right? And I would put like what road bike cyclists have, like power gels. Mm. So it's easy to get some calories because you need to be doing something. I mean, I've spent 12 to 14 hours in a stint. That's the longest I've gone, maybe a little longer. And I mean, you get winded, you're tired, you see things, you know, I've fallen asleep at the wheel. It was a Vegas Torino and the Ranger in 2007. And I hit the side of whatever it was. And my guy's like, hey, you okay? I'm like, dude, I think I actually fell asleep at the wheel of a race truck. But you're going for so long. And when you're in those limited, we got stuck and battling and all these things. It just catches up, you know, especially when it's like 3-4 in the morning. Like you're done. You're just done. But you know, you got to get there. You're not quitting. You're going. But you're just tired, you know, and you're driving, you're doing your thing. And then you kind of go in and out of like, okay, I'm all amped again. And then, okay, you kind of lose it a little, you know?
So. Yeah. And cause you think, dude, there's no way that I'm going to get sleepy or I'm going to fall asleep if I'm driving an off-road truck going through whoops and going through a bunch of shit. But you do.
You just do. And especially like Vegas Torino, what people don't realize on that one is like, you know, you stay in Vegas at the hotel. And the race doesn't start. It's like 2 hours out of town and it starts pretty early. So when you leave the hotel, it's like 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning. So like when I get in the truck and, you know, I finish that one as the sun's coming up. So it's probably, you know, 5:36 in the morning. I was up for more than 24 hours and I'm chasing and supporting Jason who starts the race. And then I get in and I do the finish, and the finish is a lot of like mountains and, you know, pine trees and rocks and sand washes, where the start is a lot of graded high speed roads, you know? So, and there's a little bit of mountains towards right before he hands it off, but it's just two totally different terrains. But when you start the race and it's daytime, you're just not tired. Yeah. And then you're chasing all day, and chasing's just as much work as driving, if not more. You're mentally like, how many miles of the gallon? How many gallons do you need when we fill you up? Is this pit good? You know, you start changing on the fly because you don't want to pit the truck for no reason. So, I mean, it's just part of it.
Yeah. Do you prefer driving in the daytime or nighttime?
I like both. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'd say I like nighttime better. I feel like with nighttime, you just focus on what's in front of you. It depends where we are, you know, like, I don't know. It's definitely slower at night. You know, you push hard, but you're definitely slowed down for whatever reason. Yeah.
What lights do you guys run?
We've run all the different lights. You know, we've had Hella, KC, Rigid, just different brands of lights. You know, there's all of them have good positives.
Of course. That's cool. So what's this Camber Kids that we hear about?
Yeah, so the Camber Kids, just a funny little hashtag, you know, of Jason's boys and my boy, and my daughter wants to get in the wheel soon too. Just having fun, you know. They have good equipment and, you know, they've been riding dirt bikes and being around four wheels their whole lives. Yeah. And so now they're getting the opportunity to race, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty epic. How are they doing?
They've been doing great. You know, we bought the truck off a customer of ours that had all our parts, and we didn't really have a lot of time to prep it. So it was like, let's make it safe first, you know, so like replumb the gas tank and make the lines and cooling and all that good. In their first race, they, you know, brand new axles in the truck. They're not our axles, they're from a different company. So it's a 40 spline axle. It broke. So they were running really strong, and, you know, we fixed it. I forgot what place they got in the first race, but it was pretty good. They had a lot of fun. They finished. And then the second race, I forget what their second race was. Maybe like the Rage at the River or something. So they've, ever since the first race, they've been on the podium every time. Yeah, exactly. So that's been really good. They've won a race. They won the first race this year. They got second in the second race. Last year they did like Glen Helen and did like, Cody did the jump champ, and, you know, Blake Wilkie was in the Baja Bug and the kids were in the Ranger. So our back tires are landing and his front tires are landing. They're very close to each other. And yeah. Blake got first, the kids got second, but they beat everybody else. You know, truck likes to fly. And then, Zach did the 6100 truck in the unlimited class and got third. Wow. And that was really cool. That was the first time he drove it, but they got to take it all around Glen Helen short course track, and he had a lot of fun, and, you know, it was just really cool opportunity.
Yeah. That's super bitching. Yeah. Do they have, do you like take them out to the desert and teach them? Do they take classes or driver coaches?
I mean, there's times we go to the desert and they just drive it. Someone sits next to them. You know, we're just kind of like, hey, you know, take it easier than go faster. Right. So like, just be smooth. We're talking about doing Dirtfish Rally School, so we might be going out there maybe this month. Yeah. Trying to figure that out right now, and I think that'd be really good. And then Allie will get in it too, because they could do these, like, they got Subaru WRXs, and then they got the BRZs, which are rear-wheel drive. Yeah. I think the BRZ would probably be really good for them for the truck, because it's rear-wheel drive, so it's a lot harder to slide around rear-wheel drive and control it than it is all-wheel drive. You know, all-wheel drive is just going to hook up. If you've ever driven like a side-by-side, like a Polaris Razor, you know, drive it in two-wheel drive, drive it in four-wheel drive. It's way easier in four-wheel drive. Yeah. Just handles better. You just stay committed, right? And I just think anything you do, whether it's road racing, go-karts, whatever, it's all going to add your comfort level. So,
weren't you doing that for a little bit, like go-kart racing or something, or you're trying to like...
No, so I was telling Joe, I want to go to that same school. It's in Oregon, yeah?
Yeah, it's in Washington.
Oh, Washington.
The Dirtfish Rally School.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I looked it up. It was like $3,000 to $4,000. I was like, dude, I'm going to go. I want to go. So I still want to go. I'm busy at the time.
Yeah. It should be really cool. I mean, maybe you come with us when we go, because, you know, we're going to do some content there with the kids.
And yeah, that'd be rad for sure. So we talked off-road, and now you guys are doing overlanding. Is that correct?
Yeah, a lot of off-road adventuring. It's been fun.
Nice. So what do you guys offer for that customer, for the gentleman who, like, you know, wants to set up a rig and just go overlanding?
Well, it's funny. We always have this conversation of what defines an overland rig. It's really the same suspension and the same everything, right? Like, our suspension performs, you know, on the graded roads, also handles the whoops. So to us, suspension's like horsepower. Yeah. So really, if you just have to add a rack and a tent and now you're an overland truck, that's the only difference, right? Yeah. Maybe a little bit stiffer spring rates or whatnot. And that's it. So really, a lot of our suspension's already crossed over. And it's really where a lot of our people are buying our stuff. Good mix of, you know, the pre-run crowd or the desert guys, the hunting people, whatever. So for us, you know, you would call it overlanding. I call it off-road adventuring, right? So just, you know, making it all happen and getting people out there doing their thing, you know? So we have, you know, different light mounts and obviously all the suspension. We carry a lot of different product lines from different people, you know, like from shocks, lights, accessories. You know, all you really got to do is take your typical truck. Yeah. Which is funny because Jason and I both had a Tundra at the same time. And mine was fenders, fiberglass, long travel, the whole thing. And his was the exact same thing with a rack and a tent and a refrigerator. And they look completely different. Everyone's like, oh, I like more of that pre-runner versus, but his actually had bypass shocks and I didn't. So it was pretty funny. Like his was actually more off-road capable than mine, but it has that look of the tent. So that makes you the overlander.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a pre-runner. For those for the people listening that don't know what a pre-runner is, can you break that down for us?
Yeah, so the term pre-runner is like a vehicle you use to drive over the race course before the race. So you're pre-running the race. And that's the true term. So like a pre-runner could be just your rental vehicle from Hertz, right? Because people have done that.
Yeah.
And
I think I've rented one of those before after the fact.
Yeah, I need a four-wheel drive Toyota something. Cool. Yeah. That F1, you rent Raptors, perfect. So yeah, so you know, anything from stock, and then it's gotten way out of hand. It could be buggies, it could be side by side, it could be what they call luxury pre-runner, which is basically a street legal trophy truck. So you take a trophy truck, put a metal cab on it with air conditioning, and you go do your thing. A lot of money in off-road. So there's literally billionaire status people doing racing, which is cool because it's part of the brotherhood, right? Like these guys are billionaires with 200-foot yachts, and they don't care if you're showing up in your 1988 Toyota Hey, do you guys hungry? You want a beer? You want to, you know, it's a brotherhood, right? Like it's all family. So yeah, pre-running, you know, that term. So like there's the pre-runner look, right? Which is the front fenders and lower in the back. And that's kind of got that misconception of what a pre-runner is. And that's it. I mean, it's just really the definition, just using this vehicle to pre-run the race, which is anything. Yeah. And you got pre-run buggies and pre-run trucks and people use the side-by-sides and it all works.
Yeah. So a lot of people say they enjoy pre-running more than they actually like racing. Is that true for you as well?
Honestly, I haven't pre-run a lot.
Okay.
You know, like to me, it's like we were running a business and have the family. So we didn't have a lot of time to pre-run. I mean, I remember having a buggy once and go, okay, cool. I'm going to do this. I made it to like mile 5, shifted from second right when I grabbed third, the tranny let go. And I was like, really, this is like... I was looking forward to this pre-running and it just ended. That was the Henderson 250 race. So, yeah, that was outside of Pahrump. It was just one of those things. It was like, it happened. Okay, cool. We've obviously pre-run like the Barstow. So you see where you're going. For me, it's more of a visual. Like I'm got my bearing, right? I know where I'm at. I know what's expected. Cause when you're racing, sometimes you're like, oh man, like I hear this section's going to be gnarly. But you're trying to picture it in your mind like, oh, it's, you know, mile 88. It's really silty and crappy. And you're like, hey, did we get there yet? Yeah, dude, you're at mile 120. I never saw a silty, crappy area, you know, so I don't know. Or it's like, oh, yeah, you know, just be a little careful around mile 80 because, you know, it gets a little rougher there. And you're like, okay, it's not too bad. And you get there and you're like, bro, this is like the gnarliest thing I've ever seen. So it just helps to see it, you know. But I think like when you go to the to Baja, you know, when you pre-run Baja, you're going from town to town off-road. So like you might pre-run, and I think of us doing it with our adventure rigs, right, where we're camping. Yeah, we can bring our Scottles, and Scottles is a Timbo Tuss thing we have that, remember pancakes on that thing?
Yeah.
So it's just this little like green propane that you use for your cooktop at the beach, you know, and it screws to the bottom of basically a round disc that's shaped like a wok, and you cook anything on it. It makes the best bacon, the best pancakes, the best everything, but it packs in a little bag. It's easy. So it's like, you know, we're camping and then we'll plan the trip like, okay, well, we're going to be on this beach here and we're going to be on that beach there. So then, you know, you're sweaty and dirty and you could just jump in the ocean, rinse off. You know, and then you could, you know, get some fresh water over you, dry off. Now you're clean. And you do that for like 3-4 days. It's like you saw the whole race course. You did the same course the guy racing it did, but you're camping at the same time. And then you wind up at like, you know, Jardines and some southern town in Baja or Coyote Cows or, you know, some spot where a bunch of people congregate and they have a bar and you got your beers and some cocktails. You're just having fun, you know. It's really cool.
I think I'd rather do that.
And that's what we've, you know, last few years we've been going down during the Baja 1000, bringing a group of people with us. And, you know, we've had like 15 trucks at a time. It's just so much fun. Campfires, like, you know, one of the years, were you there that year when we camped on the beach?
No, I didn't go that time.
You didn't go that time. Okay. But yeah, I mean, we're literally camped on the beach. It's really cool.
Yeah, you just fall asleep to the sound of the waves crashing.
Yeah, which one did you go with us?
I did the Arizona trip with you guys. Utah, Arizona.
That's what it was. That's right. Yeah. So that, just that same feeling, that would be all the inland stuff, you know? So, you know, you're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, we're by the pink coral sand dunes right outside of Zion in the Kanab Forest somewhere. Right. And it's like, but when you wake up, you're like, we're 50 miles from any town. Like, we're not near anything. And it's just beautiful. You hear the coyotes at night. Got who knows what else was lurking in the bushes around us, right? Because there's mountain lions there. There's elk. There's all kinds of stuff. But yeah, those are fun trips. And that trip, we saw a lot of different stuff. But then, you know, the planned day by water is we were on the lake, you know? So, and yeah, that was good fun.
Yeah. It was super memorable for myself. That was my first time sleeping like on a roof.
In a tent.
So I felt super safe next to Carlos G.
You guys cuddled, huh?
It was cold, you know?
Yeah. It was cold. Isn't that where Carlos said, hey, where's that hand going?
I was like, shh, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Just go to sleep.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And there were a couple nights it got really cold, you know, that definitely got cold. And that's what makes it fun. You know, you got the campfire. We're cooking tri-tips. And what did we make, like 6 tri-tips or something? So good. We get them, they call it Cardiff Crack. So down in Cardiff, California, there's a market down there. It's just known for it. And one of the guys went and picked up a whole bunch of those. And, you know, we made them on barbecues in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
That was like the best meal that I've had ever, especially in the middle of nowhere, you know?
Yeah. And you tell people how good this stuff is and they're like, oh, okay, cool, sure. And then they have it and they're like, oh my gosh, what was that?
And the crazy part about it, that there was an abundance of it. There was so much of it and you're full, but you just want to keep eating it because it's so good.
Yeah, it was fun, you know? And that's what I think is cool about the adventuring too, is like, you know, you could add activities of fishing or shooting or archery, or, you know, we even bring like just these like SIG air guns or BB guns, right? So much fun, you know, the off-roading, the activity, checking out cool stuff, photography, cooking. And so the cooking element I think is fun because, you know, you set up your camp and, you know, I think it was that last night we're like in the middle of like, what do they call that area? We're in Arizona, Prescott. We're in the middle of the forest in Prescott. Same thing. We had no idea where we were. There's no cell phone service. And it was just beautiful. And we're just camped in the, like, not big pine trees, but kind of lower pine trees and really cool area. But yeah, just trails for miles. You're exploring. You see weird animals walking by. Like, there's bears. There's bobcats. There's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
we were moving through those dirt roads too. We're bugging.
Yeah. Suspension, man. It's like you got good suspension. You can go a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the fun part.
Yeah. It sounds cool. It just sounds like a bunch of friends just hanging out, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know, we invite some of our good customers with us and, you know, mellow people and it's all kinds of different personalities. Everyone gets along really well and adds to the story, you know? So, yeah. So the next trip we're planning, Northern California, called the Lost Coast. And so that's the next one we're going to do. So just add a whole different element to it.
Mm. How far up are you going to go?
In between San Francisco and Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's just there's just nothing up there. It's weird. It's a beautiful area and it's all foresty, right? Meets the beach and people don't really get there often.
Yeah. Is this going to be your first time taking the Gladiator out?
Cody took the Gladiator last time. I'm not sure what truck I'll bring. If I'll do the Gladiator, if I'll bring the new Tacoma, we'll see.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the new Bronco?
Can't wait to see it. I have one on order. I wish it had a 3.5 liter Raptor engine in it because I like power.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I'm excited. I think it's, you know, something fresh and exciting. I mean, the Raptor's been great. The Bronco's got so much heritage with, you know, the 60s Broncos and, you know, they've morphed a few times. They got more full size. And now we'll see what this one is. I think it's based kind of more off the Ford Ranger, but a Bronco. So it'd be cool.
Are you guys planning on making parts for that Bronco as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're going to do a lot of cool stuff.
That's exciting.
Hell yeah. Let's get to a few of these questions, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so people had a couple questions for you, Jerry. What has been your favorite build that you have done for a customer and why?
Done quite a few really cool builds. Favorite for a customer. It's kind of a tough one because we've done so many, you know. No, we did one for Alex Wacker. We did his Tundra because he was going to race Nora. So we did a full long travel caged fuel cell Tundra. That was a really fun build for sure. Race trucks have been fun, you know, doing the full blown race trucks. We did one for a Sheik in Qatar.
Uh-huh.
And it was cool because it was like, hey, you know, I want you to match my 918 Spider, which is a Porsche. So it had green accents. So we did an all black carbon fiber body with green accents. And I thought that thing was really cool. I think we tested it quickly, you know, like taped up all the arms and, you know, we didn't want to scratch it or anything. We just had to functions test it. And that was it, you know, make sure that's not doing anything weird. And yeah. But yeah, it's just off in the Middle East getting used as a toy. Yeah, just stuff like that. And then, you know, some of the first like long travel kits, you know, we've had like, you know, back when a 97 F-150 was brand new, it was actually an F-250. So it was like a weird seven lug thing they did for the first year. So like an F-250 went from the OBS, like the OJ Simpson Bronco looking yeah. F-250. Then in 97, it changed to look like an F-150. So it had a different look. So it was kind of like a light duty F-250, but we did a custom long travel kit for that. And that was really cool. Cause I think that kind of put us on the map of like, well, these guys build like long A arms for new trucks, you know? So that was pretty special. I thought that one was pretty fun.
I think you guys have always been like in my book, like leaders in your industry, as far as, you know, if, you know, cause I remember growing up and seeing all the Dirt Alliance guys, you know, you saw these videos and then your guys' Camberg truck, the white one. And I think the dream was always to have a Ranger with like Camberg, like I-beams and radius arms, you know? Because prior to then, you couldn't get a kit. Now there's kits. People make kits for trucks. Before, people would, you know, you'd have to go to a fab shop and they would have to custom make it. So it's pretty awesome that if you go to the Camberg website, you could choose. There's like kits to choose from, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole thing is when we started, you know, it was building shocks through the bed on my Toyota truck. You couldn't go anywhere and get this. And we brought, you know, like I said, the Heim joint radius arm, the custom I-beams, the links, all these things you couldn't do. And then we just did it high end. And obviously there were some people saw what we were doing, you know, they just came out with like the cheaper product and you need it, right? Like I remember, you know, AJ at the Baja shop, you know, like, you know, hey, we cater to the kid that works at the grocery store. Yeah. Well, that's cool. You know, we just want to push the envelope. Right. And you know, there's a place for everyone. Right. And it's, just fun to watch how much it's grown. And now there's you know, the whole side-by-side thing, like you could just go finance 20 grand, $400 a month. And you have a 4-seater 1,000 cc, you know, close to 200 horsepower side-by-side. And those things move.
Dude, you know? That is scary.
It is kind of scary. First time I drove this Can-Am that I have is we have a Can-Am X3. I'm just like, they sell this to people? Like, whoa.
Right?
Like, people, if they don't know what they're doing,
nope.
Yeah.
Big trouble.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But hey, you can go buy a Porsche with turbos too, you know, and same thing. Like, anyone could go buy a dirt bike. And, you know, that whole thing of danger is like, you know, they talk about vehicles that could roll over or crash. It's like, well, when you get on a bicycle at Walmart for $99, it just tips over if you don't know how to balance it. So it's all the same, you know. You could buy a skateboard. I mean, I know more people hurt on a skateboard than anything, right?
Yeah. That's why I don't skate anymore.
Yeah.
Shit hurts too much.
I quit that after my first broken bone. Oh, like, okay, no. That was it. Kept me from surfing.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Damn. When was that?
That was freshman year in high school. So Huntington Beach High School surf team. Cool. I made it. And I'm on a skateboard and broke my ankle. So.
All right. Let's go see another one. So another question was, will he ever race again?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just raced not that long ago. Yeah.
I don't think
people
follow you then.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's good. I mean, it's a good question because, like I said, Jason and I, like, we're the ones driving and we're also the ones running the team. We're also the ones running the business. So when you got a guy like Welchel working for us, you know, back in the day, like, he's driving, like, there's really not a better driver out there. He's like one of the top five best dudes ever.
Yeah.
And the guy's fast, you know, and so that's cool. And then we would drive and have fun in certain races. But basically, every time Jason and I drove the truck, we're on the podium or really close to it. And then we had Alex Figge driving with us. Same thing. Like, he wanted a race, so he brought something to the table. He formerly did IndyCar and Pirelli Series. He's like a real race car driver, and he wanted to do off-road. And, you know, we gave him a good opportunity. He's a very good teammate. We've split some races. And then, you know, the best race that we all had together was a Parker race where Jason actually rolled off the start line. It was Alex Gonzalez's first race.
Yeah, I was there.
Oh, yeah. So Jason rolls off the start. He corrects it, catches way back up. Figge had the fastest second lap over every truck in the field. And then I got in kind of more like, okay, I'm going to drive a conservative pace because we got to finish. We need the points. And I don't know, we're in like eighth place or ninth. So I'm like, you know, knowing like you got one lap to go, you're really not going to make that up. Well, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, Alex Gonzalez has a flat. Okay, now I'm in seventh place. Oh, there's U-Theory crashed. Okay, now I'm in sixth place. And so then now I'm running in third place. You know, I know Alex is going to give it everything he has. He's got more fight in him to catch me than I do to hold him off because I just want to finish, but I don't want to give it up to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he was behind me for like at least, you know, a lot of miles, right? And I was holding him off, holding him off, holding him off. And then I got a flat in the sand wash coming back in. And so like, there's a cool video, like I'm missing every body panel on the truck from when Jason crashed. And then the whole day of like the panels ripping off from the wind, and him and I are going hard, like this hauling ass down the sand wash. And this is, you got to understand, the rocks in the sand wash are massive. Like, they're big. And that's why you don't have to push it that hard in that sand wash. And then he nerfs me and, you know, okay, cool. Well, he's beating me on time.
Yeah.
Right. Cause he already started, two positions behind us. So I already know this. So it's like, okay, well, if he finishes on my bumper, it's like, he's still beating me on time.
Yeah.
Mm. So, okay. He nerfs me. Etiquette's okay. Pull over, let him go. Now I'm on his bumper. He ain't pulling me. Just, you know, same thing. Now I'm like, he's in front of me. And, when someone's in front of you off road, you can see what the truck's doing.
Yeah.
So I think it's easier as long as it's not too dusty. Well, the wash hits pavement right before you go under the bridge. He pretty much spins out and almost goes into the bushes. Now, if I was trying to beat him, like for real, and he wasn't in one of our trucks and I have to beat him, oh, I would have just nerfed him into the bushes and I would have definitely beat him. And because he would have been stuck there for
a while. That would have been awesome.
But I fully locked it up. Like, typically I would have just pitched it sideways, put the side of my truck into whatever was there to stop me and then keep going. But it's Alex, you know, it is what it is. So he got third in his first race in his brand new Camberg built truck. Yeah. We got fourth, but Jason rolled and he was on his side for like almost 20 minutes. Yeah. We were ecstatic, you know? And, so, you know, that was a good race. Like, all three of us had a good run. Like, you know, we know we probably would have won that dang race if Jason didn't put it on his side, but it happens. Yeah. Then Andy McMillan, he almost did the same thing. He bicycled it all on video. That's gone viral. Same thing Jason did, but you know, people are standing out there. So Jason kind of turned it because he didn't want to crash into, you know, the spectator standing out there. And so, you know, he bicycled it and he just kind of tipped it over on its side, but it was just enough to like ruin our day.
Yeah.
Anyways, so yeah, you know, we're building a new truck that him and I are really excited to race. So we're starting with a 1973 F100 cab and we got this new trophy truck platform. So it's all MIG welded suspension, going to be plenty strong, all the same geometry, bigger shocks. We could make it much quicker. We already have five of these kits in the works right now. And it's just going to be a new fun platform we're going to sell. And it's going to be budget, you know, for like 40 grand, you get the whole engine cage, all your suspension, rear links, rear end housing, hubs, Himes, hardware. And you drop your cab on it and then you can hand build your cage or pay us to build your cage. You know?
That is badass.
It's going to be really cool. And So we'll race that and hopefully do like the Baja 1000 and that, the Mint 400, you know, pick the big races. You know, there's a bunch of races that are just noise, you know, but then there's the good ones that, you know, let's go tell a story. Like, yeah, let's go back to fun.
Yeah.
You know, so that'd be cool.
Man, that sounds pretty epic.
Mm-hmm. That sounds cool, man.
That so that new truck, is it different from a Kinetic platform?
No, it is a Kinetic platform. So it's basically the same truck as our current 61 trophy truck. We just made provision because the front of the Kinetic trucks are 3.5 bypass, 3-inch coilover. This will have a 4.0 bypass, 3-inch coilover. And it's all MIG welded. So it's funny. I don't want to say this in a derogatory way. I don't mean it that way. But like the way we build our stuff is very, very precision and high end and expensive, right? The way some other builders build things is they build it more basic, right? So we're actually building it more like that, thicker metal, so we can MIG weld it. So there's a term when you fit the plates like corner to corner, or there's where you do like a T fitting so that front plates pulled back a half an inch and you could just weld like the overhang. Yeah. It's just like a fillet.
Yeah.
And so all the new stuff we're just doing it more like that. So it's just quicker and easier. One MIG weld pass, but we're building the parts in like a quarter to one third of the time.
Yeah.
And all you're paying for is the labor. So now if a set of lower A-arms is $2,500 versus $8,000, well, if you get a crack, you fix it. If it's damaged, you just chuck it in the trash, buy a new one. You're still saving money. You know, so that's kind of our theory. And it's thicker metal. It's going to be stronger. It's all chromoly and everything. But I think when people see what this truck's capable of, they're going to scratch their head and go, okay, now I can't afford the $300-400 grand, but I can spend 200. Now I could buy one of those, you know, or I could buy the platform and I could finish it myself with my friends, you mm-hmm. know, so that'll be good.
So your shop, do you have any plans on moving to a bigger location? Cause you guys are on it. You guys are so busy, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking, like it's back to the COVID thing. You know, there's a lot of businesses that are like barely holding on. I see a lot more becoming available. Yeah. I mean, we're in like 14,000 square feet right now. We need at least 20,000. That's just a commodity in Huntington Beach. So, you know, we got to look around and, you know, figure out what we could do to get some more space and some more power. Because once we get more space and power, we could do more. You know, we could buy a laser, we could buy the press brakes, we could start doing more of our work in-house.
Yeah. So for anybody wanting to work at Camberg, what kind of characteristics do you look for when hiring?
We're just looking for like good, honest people that work hard. You know, like I feel like there's people with a lot of talent and all they want to do is show off their pictures on Instagram, but they don't want to put in the work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, cool, you could weld pretty, but if you could only do one arm a day and that other guy does three a day and the quality of it's like, you know, within 5% of you, I'd rather have the guy doing three a day.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of prima donnas out there that like, you know, like, hey, I'm a good welder. Well, cool. There's a lot of good welders. I want a good worker. I want a mm-hmm. good employee.
Yeah.
You know, people that put pride in the work and they want to make the good welds, but they also want to get work done.
Yeah.
That's a big one. You know, as you know, it's hard now with minimum wage in California so high, it's hard to train that young kid out of high school because you got to stop your higher paid guy to train this other kid that's, in my opinion, overpaid to learn a skill, right? Like, I'd love to do internships, but the liability in California to allow internships kind of killing it, you know? And a lot of it comes down to that is like you pay a guy the, you know, $11, $12 minimum wage and you got workers' comp insurance on top of it. And now you're training him. He doesn't even know what he's doing. So he's not even really producing the product. So, you know, unfortunately we need people with experience.
Yeah.
You know, we love to train people. We'd love to go down that road. I just, in California, how do you do that?
You know? Mm-hmm. Have you ever like teamed up with like a school or anything to
a
partnership?
The guys at the fab school, you know, they'll send people in, you know, they'll apply and do their thing, which is cool. But same thing, the kids pay so much money to go to the fab school. They come out and they want to make $20 an hour without the experience.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so the experience goes a long way. I mean, some of our best employees, you know, they started at the bottom. Now we're here, right? Mm-hmm. Like a Drake song, but it's true. It's like, you know, Corey, one of our main guys running the back of the shop. I mean, he was working at U-Haul doing tow hitches. And he came to our shop. We did a AWS meeting with all the junior colleges in the area. So it's American Welding Society. So we had Compton, Santa Ana, Orange Coast, LA City, all these colleges. We got people who are young, people who are ex-cons that are now in a welding program, you know, probably 500 people at the shop, like having pizza and like checking out the trucks and, you know, Q&A with me kind of thing. Corey is one of those kids that kind of like held his hand up at the end of the meeting, like, hey, are you hiring? Yeah, like this is where you're going to start. He did a little weld test and he's from the bottom. Now he's running the back of the shop doing ordering and test fits, putting jigs together, doing some CAD. We're looking for those kind of people, you know, like this is going to be my career. I'm going to make Camberg my career.
Yeah.
And I'm going to earn my keep. I'm going to, you know, Carlos is the same way. He came from a customer service rep to being a general manager, you know, and it's the same thing. Like, take initiative, you know, it's not one person making this whole thing happen here. It's a team. You got to be like a star of the team.
Yeah.
And take those opportunities when they come too, like, you know, like he did. You know?
Yeah.
Well, Carlos comes from the forums before Camberg, right? Like Desert Rangers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, that's epic. So what's the future for Camberg? Like, do you think the Camberg kids want to take over, or do you think, hey, well, I'm going to sell it at one point? Like, what do you want? What direction do you want it to go to?
I mean, we've had people look at the company and, you know, everything's for sale, right? But you're not going to give away 23 years for a deal. Right. So, and even if it's sold, like I look at the opportunity of that as like, I'd still want to be on board and collect a good paycheck and then really focus on what I'm good at. But right now it's like, you know, we got to any direction we want to go, you know, I mean, more kits for new vehicles and we're cranking, you know, we just have so much fun. I call it a giant hobby shop. You know, it's like, we're just moving forward, doing what we do. I mean, you always want to make more money, but really, when you make more money, what's different? Honestly, like, you know, you go through the harbor, you know, a guy in his little 15-foot boat, he's looking at the big yacht. Well, that guy on that big yacht's looking at the other guy's bigger yacht. Like, where does it end? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you get a nice car, a truck, and it's like, well, okay, now you got a brand new Raptor and you're going to go off road and you're like, oh, I don't want to go because I don't want to scratch it, versus the guy in his 95 Toyota truck. It's like, dude,
that's tearing it up.
Best time ever. Tearing it up, you know? Yeah, I got a scratch, man. Battle scars.
Yeah.
Dude. Like, exactly. I earned that one, you know? Way more fun. And it's the same, you know? It's really about the person, you know? And that's why I always tell people, it's not how much you make. It's how much you spend, how much you have left over, and what kind of fun are you having along the way? Because, I mean, you could work, you know, 16 hours a day and just look back at, you know, I'm 60 years old and all I did is work my whole life, versus the guy that's like, I never really made a lot of money, but man, I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm living life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
So you guys, like, do you have like any like organizations that like people can help support? Are you guys part of anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of organizations we've been in and out of over the years. You know, there's Corva, which is a good one. There's Orba. These are, you know, coalition of off-road stuff. There's so many different ones, you know, the guys fighting. It's just like the NRA, you know, there's NRA and there's like five more gun organizations. They're just fighting for what you believe in, right? Like if you're a gun guy, and even if you're not a gun guy, but you know, feel like, hey, it's my right to own a gun. Well, these are our lands. We pay taxes and we fund the BLM and we fund the Rangers and their salaries off of our tax. And these are our lands. And when people want to close down our lands, they're not just closing it to you on your motorcycle or you and your truck. They're closing it to you on your horse, you on your mountain bike, you walking, hiking. And it's gnarly. Like, you know, go to Zion, right? You're in Zion. You should be able to do, this is America. I could just walk down. Why am I being told no? Right? Like, think about that for a second. Like, this is a land of the free, but we're really not very free in a lot of situations. Like, there's park hours. Why is there an hour in the middle of the forest? Like, or the desert for that matter.
Yeah.
So, you know, politically, you know, people ask, like, you know, who do you vote for? Who do you like? To me, it's not the person, it's the policy, right? And so, like, you know, under the Obama administration, you know, we're all excited. Your first black president, the guy's well-spoken, you know, cool. But when I'm watching, like, okay, we're not doing the race through that start because they just closed this and made it some kind of protected area. it's the same desert that's to the left of the road, that's to the right of the road. No one goes there. We're racing down the power line roads and the sand washes. When it rains, the sand wash repairs itself. The fire road gets plowed because it's a fire road, and they need to do these roads to access if there's forest fire, or they need to do these roads to access the power poles that are running next to them because they got to maintain the power lines. That's what we're racing on. And, you know, it sucks when they close like randomly, oh, we're going to close 100,000 acres of this land. You're not allowed to race. And then 5 years later, you're like, hey, guess what's back in there? There's a huge solar farm and it's now bankrupt. You drive into Las Vegas, look to your left.
Yeah.
That's land we're not allowed to use, but look what's out there now. Yeah. So why are they closing these lands? You know? So for me, it's, you know, politically, it's like policy is what I vote on. I just want some common sense, some policy. And that's what, you know, the current administration's just reopened a bunch of land that was like a land grab, they call it. They just closed the land. Not any meetings, you know, even the people that show up to the few meetings that they have. It's like they're all off-roaders, like don't close the land. No one's there saying keep it open or close it. Everyone's there saying No one's there saying close it. Everyone's there saying let's keep this open. Like we go back here, we go camping or drive my truck down a dirt road, whatever. Yeah. And so these organizations are like the NRA with guns, but they're like this with the trucks and the business, like trying to keep lands open. That's the biggest thing. Fighting California. I mean, man, we just were in Lake Tahoe and the kids wanted to see the state capitol. And I mean, just go drive through Sacramento. Like that's right out the front door is sad, right? It's downright sad how the people are living there. And that's how our state is run. But they're doing the same, like, oh, we just need to close, like, you know, 2 million acres of land for whatever reason.
So I wanted to say, Camberg's in a good position where I feel like, you know, car manufacturers are making cars. You know, they're going to keep making cars. More people are going to get into off-road. More people have been getting into off-road. People want to, you know, lift their car, you know, leveling kit. Better suspension. So yeah, I think you guys are in a good spot and you guys are going to be around for years to come, which is pretty awesome. Any advice that you'd give to like an entrepreneur or someone that, you know, from a business perspective, any advice that you could give?
Yeah, I mean, just if you have passion and you believe in something, like don't wait for someone to tell you it's okay. Don't wait for, you're doing this for you. You have to try it. You know, and if you fail, you fail, right? You try it, it didn't work. Okay, now the next idea. Now, if you can't make it work after a few times, maybe you go get a job, you gain more experience, and then you scratch your head and go, oh, I got a better idea. Now then you try it again. I mean, there's so many stories of people, I mean, whether it's like hardware, nuts and bolts. I mean, do we need another nut and bolt manufacturer? No, but there's always that new guy that starts a company that's doing extremely well. Yeah. He just did something a little better, you know? Yeah, I mean, clothing companies come and go. There's brands, sunglasses, you know, all of that. Like, it's just, you just go for it. Do it. Make it happen.
Yeah, it's just finding that niche. And like, it's just kind of like what you guys did. You guys found something that was missing, and then you just produced it. And then now look at you guys, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's about that. It's the, like you said, it's the passion and the willingness, the wanting to do it.
Yeah.
All that plays a huge role.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are a lifestyle. You guys are such a huge part of off-road. I feel like, you know, you guys started something when, like Joe said, there was nothing around similar to what you guys started. So
definitely been a fun ride.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just proves that like, you guys have been in this for so long. Like it just proves what you guys are doing, and you guys stay true to yourselves the whole way. And like people appreciate that, man. They appreciate it a lot. I like seeing companies that like, you know, you look at them now and then you go, okay, well like, let me check them out for a little bit. And then you go back to when they started and you're like, oh shit, like nothing's changed. You know, their whole like mantra, like everything's the same, you know, and that speaks volumes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, Jerry. Well, before we wrap up, Jerry, is there any last words that you want to throw in before we close up the podcast?
I'm good. That was fun. Thank you for having me. Always cool to share the story and, you know, kind of gets me thinking, like you talk about the history and about what we're doing and then it gets me thinking, oh yeah, what is next? You know, I got to go down that road.
Yeah, it's a trip. Yeah, thanks for coming in, man. Like, yeah, like when Mike said that you were coming in, I was like, oh shit, for real? Like, he wants to come and talk to us? Like,
yeah.
Sick.
Yeah, I was telling Joe, like, you coming is such a big deal for myself, just because I remember being a teenager and seeing your guys' like trucks and like your products and seeing you guys like grow from Ranger parts to off-road trucks, like race trucks, you know? And it's cool that you're, oh shit, that you're right in front of me. Yeah, so thank you so much for taking the time to come over and chop it up with us.
Yeah, guys, it's flattering, I guess, but yeah, thank you.
Jerry, sure. Where could people find you? You know, what's your website? What's your Instagram? All that good stuff.
Yeah, so the business is camburg.com, CAMBURG.com. Camburg Racing or at Camburg Racing is all of our social platforms. Our race trucks are at Kinetic Trucks, but Kinetic has a K in the front and a K in the back. Yeah. And then I'm just at Jerry Zaden.
Awesome. Jerry, one more thing. The name to a business is very important. How did Camburg come to be? How did that name?
Very similar to the Motley Crue story with the U and the two dots above it, right? Like, so my last name is Zeidenberg. It's very German. My grandfather, when he came over here, it was like Zeiden and Berg, and then it just got meshed together. And Jason is Jason Campbell, so it's just Camburg. It's just a morph of the names there. Pretty simple. You know, there's a million names. How do you do it? What do you do? You know, think of Google. Like, what does Google mean? Like,
right. Yeah.
But it's Google. Like, right. So I don't know. A name's a name, you know, just come up with something. Don't think too hard about it. Make it happen.
And run with it.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, Fox. It's, what's Fox mean? You know, it's a Fox Tales, the logo, right? Yeah. And just the logo. It's just a name. Come up with something cool. I would say in hindsight, like, you know, when it's a long word written out, it's kind of hard to make that legible and mm-hmm. small, right?
Yeah, it's like hard to market, yeah.
When you take a fox, it's F-O-X, and it could be small and square, and it looks cool. Yeah, you gotta kind of some of that, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. Well, good stuff.
Yeah, man.
Jerry, once again, thank you so much for coming through. We really appreciate you. You know, we appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man, so it means a lot that you came down.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. Dude.
Thank you, guys.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you guys have a great rest of your week.
Peace.
Peace.